Hello and welcome to another episode of Time to Talk Titanic. I'm joined by three of my beautiful co-hosts. We have Presley. Hello, Presley. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for asking. Callum. Now, Callum has been on the podcast before. You've heard his voice, but you have not seen his face. And now you have the honor to. Callum, how are you?
I'm good. I'm the man behind the voice. Got a face for radio, as my granddad used to say. So, yeah, it's lovely to be here. Yeah, thank you for kind of inviting me back on and so I can be a part of it.
You've got a really good voice. I could imagine you being on like BBC Radio 2 or something, like hosting like a breakfast show or something. And I've already told you, you've got very good eyebrows. You've got very angular shaped. See, you're like a villain. You could be like Billy Zane. Like, those are some excellent eyebrows. Or Ismay, actually. You'd be a good Ismay.
No one ever used to mention it. And then this year, even students of mine mention it. And now it's just completely gone to my head. So I'm going to roll with it.
I hope you've had students say that your brows are on fleek. I hope that's
happened. Yeah. They've seen the pride pin and they knew it was okay.
Love it. Love it. And last but not least, by any means, someone that we're all used to now. You've made most of the episodes, actually, which is like, you're like on level with me, and I've been at every one. So like, it's, you know, eventually I'll be gone and it'll be Sebastian will be the head honcho. So I, you know, watch this space.
Next episode, I need to like practice the intro and be like, hey everybody, welcome to it.
yeah. But how are you doing, bud? You okay?
I'm doing fine. I was sad I couldn't be here last time, but you know, when it's between Traction and Titanic, it's a tie.
Yeah, well, that was why I kind of wanted, when I first put the call out for co-hosts, I wanted quite a big pool of people, not only so that we're getting differing kind of points of view and opinions and different ranges of knowledge and interest, but also so that if someone can't make it, other people can make it, which is,
I mean, we all have different calendars and, you know.
Yeah, totally different calendars, different time zones. I mean, poor Jay, I don't even know what time it is there. I could look at my phone, but it's right there. I can't be bothered. But he's either asleep or just waking up. It's one of the two. But yeah, this is great. And it's nice. It's a nice different little mix that we've got today. And an interesting topic. So before we jump into, I mean, you'll have already seen the title of the Spotify or Apple podcast like episode and or the YouTube, you know what you're watching. I don't need to tell you, you've clicked on it. And if you don't know, you're watching an episode where we discuss if the Titanic tragedy could have been prevented, and if so, how. Don't say by not hitting an iceberg.
You took my only point this evening, Aaron. My only point.
If anyone here was going to say that, I'll allow it. But you've got to say it in like the most funny, creative, out there way. Like, so I'll allow it, but it's got to be good. Do you know, when he comes in now, I'll let him know that Louis will come in here and he'll just say it. You won't even care if it's maybe already been said. Louis will come in and he'll just say, well, if they didn't hit that iceberg, that'd have fixed it. You're right. I can see that happening. Now, before we get into it, I just want to tell people that if they don't know, as I've already kind of mentioned, and I have mentioned on previous episodes, but this might be the first episode that you're tuning into, we are on YouTube, we're on Spotify, we're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, which I didn't know until 2 days ago, because I upload this onto Anchor, and Anchor basically does everything else. And it's just a coincidence that the platform is called Anchor, and that this is a podcast about ships, and that our logo has an anchor.
Or it's just
serendipity. I love it. It's just written in the stars, like Jack and Rose, who are two people we're going to speak about very soon. But you can find this on YouTube and like multiple streaming platforms. So you can either watch it and see us on YouTube, or you can just listen to it and go about your day. Or if you're willing to be one of those weird people that like pays for YouTube so that like they don't have ads and have like YouTube Red, you can, I guess, listen to and do other things on your phone, which I'm super tempted. I'm like this close to doing it because I listen to YouTube all the time and I'm getting really sick of ads, like really sick of ads. But I also don't know, do I want to pay for YouTube? I don't know. I'm at a crossroads. I'm at a point in my life where I'm like, I've got disposable income. I could pay for YouTube. That's where I'm at.
How you afford that mortgage, though? You know, you need to cancel those avocados, those Starbucks, because that's how you're going to afford a mortgage.
That's how, well, I often say to Paul, it started off as a joke. It's maybe not now, but I always say I could sell my body. I could be like those women in France that Jack would draw, except I wouldn't have a handsome young man drawing me. I'd keep it very low profile. So, as well, I want to mention, within the last hour or so, I've finally done something that I hadn't been putting it off. I felt like I wanted to get to a point where I knew that we had quite a reliable kind of constant viewership. And we're at that stage. I've been keeping an eye on analytics. And we now have a Patreon. A couple of people had asked me if we did have a Patreon or if we did have perks. And I'd always said no. But then I started to feel a bit silly because I've basically got people messaging me saying, I'd be willing to help you do what you're doing. Can I? And I was basically saying no, which is nice. But, you know, this isn't free. Like what we do, essentially, when I'm doing this, I could be doing commissions. I could be doing drawings for people. You know, that we're using our own personal time. The platform that we record on costs money. The equipment that we use. So, you know, this show does come at a slight cost. But even just in terms of enjoying the show and want to support it, you now have a means to do so. So if you search for Time to Talk Titanic on Patreon, you will see that there are four tiers. Now, the fourth tier, I'll mention that last, but it's the best. It's super exciting. I'm going to start at the fourth tier. So the fourth tier, which is £12 a month. So obviously Patreon would adjust for what your currency is, wherever you live. But in British sterling, it's £12 a month. Now for that tier, you get all the previous benefits of being able to suggest episode topics, being able to ask questions, to vote on polls for YouTube thumbnails, for titles of episodes. You know, you will decide what we discuss. You will be the first to watch the YouTube episodes. So you will have 2 weeks with a private link to be the first to watch these episodes before anyone else. Your comments, your feedback, your responses will be used to tease these episodes for 2 weeks until they're made public to everyone else and they're uploaded to Spotify and all these other places. So all these amazing things. As well, the fourth tier, which is the main kahuna, it's like the big baller tier, £12 a month, you will be able to join us in these recordings. You will be here. If you're watching on YouTube, you will be on this screen. You don't need to have your camera on. You don't even need to contribute. You don't even need to speak if you don't want to. Every guest will come in muted. And if they would like to interject, if they would like to give their opinion and discuss and prove that they know way more than us and eventually become host of the show, they would just need to raise their hand. I'd unmute them and they can speak. And so you can be in these shows. As part of an audience member or as an active participant for £12 a month. So feel free to go over to patreon.com, look for Time to Talk Titanic and check out our tier list.
And the very you first... too can become captain of this show.
Yes, exactly. It's just going to be like a battle of the brains and yeah, I'll get killed off and it'll be fine and I'll be a prostitute. It's okay. But I've already said I'm chill with that. It is what it is. So... yeah, that's where we're at. The very first tier, it's like £2.50 a month and you just get to support the show. It's the equivalent of like buy me a coffee kind of thing. So like £2.50 a month. If you just enjoy listening, but you don't really want anything in return, you can give that. And that means the world. So yeah, that's a thing. And with that said, I think we now need to discuss what is on Callum's t-shirt. The star-crossed lovers that were aforementioned, Jack and Rose.
We love them. I have on a Titanic t-shirt today too.
Presley has a Titanic t-shirt. I feel like a fraud. We've got two people here with beautiful Titanic t-shirts on. Me and Sebastian are just like, might as well go home.
On Saturday, we wear Titanic. And I've completely misinterpreted the dress code. It's like, you know, everyone is in suits and stuff. And I'm like, wait, this isn't a secret Hawaii shirt theme? Oh.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I totally get that. But it was just announced now that Disney owns Titanic, which when I first heard that, you know, that Disney had bought over Fox, like the mouse ate Fox, I was like, interesting. Okay, they own Titanic. That's a thing. But Paramount owns the American distribution rights, whereas Disney owns everywhere else. So next year, I think the 10th of February starting, Titanic will be in cinemas. So, you know, they didn't wait long. They're getting in that Valentine's Day Titanic wonga, that cash, which will be plentiful. As far as I know, Titanic was surpassed as the highest grossing film of all time by Avatar and then Avengers Endgame, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was definitely one of those, you know, superhero films. But, you know, if they keep doing this, eventually Titanic is going to be back at the top of that list. If, because, and Disney has no shame. Disney doesn't know what shame means. It doesn't have a shame button. It's quite happy to take its own films and remake them, knowing that people will just eat it up. And I kind of love it. I kind of think it's terrifying. But they will happily release Titanic twice a year if they want. They'll do it for Valentine's Day. Well, actually, to be fair, if they run it long enough, it could run from Valentine's Day right through to the kind of the anniversary of the sinking, if they did that, which they might, because they would definitely make, not that they're spending much money on doing that, they would just make, they'd make money. So Titanic might very well be the top of the highest grossing film of all time list eventually. So I went to see it in 2012 when it was released for the anniversary, the 100 year anniversary of the sinking. In 3D, yeah. And Presley, I saw you nodding. Did you go see that too?
Yeah. I wanted to myself, but I never went.
I missed out on the chance to do it. I've been kicking myself ever since.
Yeah, same, same.
I didn't fancy Leo in that film. He's too twinky for me. No offense to twinks, but he was a twink. Billy Zane, though, whoa. But seeing Leo's nipple in 3D in that car scene, it's coming towards you like the first funnel. You know, it's big, it's there, it's... And I went with my friend Rebecca, who, she very much liked Leo in that film. And I was like, yeah, whatever. But then I got to that scene and I was like, hi, nipple. But it was good. It was definitely good. You know, James Cameron, although he made Avatar with the 3D aspect in mind, which was why it took so long for him to start making that film, it's really interesting that there are scenes in Titanic that, although the whole concept of 3D wasn't really a thing, maybe in the back of his mind, he thought it would happen one day to that film. But there are a lot of scenes in Titanic in 1997 that lend themselves to the 3D aspect. You know, like the first funnel I mentioned, we see Fabrizio's point of view where the funnel's coming down to his face. And that was really effective in 3D. So yeah, it's... I don't know who I'll go and see it with on Valentine's Day, because me and my partner, we don't do Valentine's Day. We think that's a cash grab, let alone Titanic coming out again. That's, you know, double cash grab. But I will definitely go and see it. And Presley's dog will absolutely go and see it. Presley's dog is like, I'm there. Like, Aaron, I'll go with you. Like, you don't need to go alone. Presley's dog is front of the queue, already got his ticket. Like,
this is what happens when you mention Leo's nipple.
Yep, dogs go wild.
Everybody gets around.
Bitches be crazy. I don't know if the dog's a girl or not, but bitches just be crazy. So, but Presley's just like consoling the dog. Like, it's okay, the nipple
I'm
won't
trying
be...
to get them to shut up so I can talk.
They're like, will it be 3D again? I don't know. Presley's like, I don't know if it will be 3D again. Just shut up. But yeah, so that's exciting. That's cool that there will be another opportunity to see. Because if you think about it, you know, that was 10 years ago it was last out. So kids who were like toddlers at the time will now be able to go and see Titanic on the big screen for the first time in their lives.
Like, that's,
yeah, that's wild. If they were like 4 years old, 5 years old at the time, they're now like teenagers. They're the TikTok generation. The TikTok's the platform that I'm still like, you know, I'm late to the game. I've got plans to take little snippets of our episodes and put them on TikTok, but
You're not alone, Aaron. It's like I'm trying to get into the thing, but it's just like it's not me, I guess.
Aaron, Aaron, if you want to appoint me, I'll help you.
I love
I was
you, 10.
I was 10 when I saw the Titanic in 2012.
Wow. I'm trying to think, right. So what age was I? I was 16. So it's one of those things. It's not much older, but the difference between a 10-year-old and a 16-year-old, you know, Callum and I both work in education. Presley, you don't work in education, do you?
No.
No. I made like a big assumption there. Like, for all I knew, Presley could have been like a teacher, and I'm like, she's not a teacher. But, you know, so Callum and I both work
in... just walk into a classroom and know what it would better.
Yeah, totally. But Callum and I both work in education. The difference in a 10-year-old and a 16-year-old is like wild, whereas like the difference between like a 26-year-old and a 32-year-old isn't like that much. Like, it's, you know, so yeah, like that's cool that the TikTok generation is finally going to get their big Titanic moment.
I think there will be a hunger for it though, that whenever I do teach, I'm a history teacher, so whenever a ship or something comes up on the screen and we're talking about ships in say the First World War, Second World War, kids do know what Titanic is. They do recognize it. They know potentially some of the memes as well. So, you know, there's a hunger for it, and maybe a whole new generation of people will be able to kind of take it across to the TikTok platform, hopefully.
Yes.
And it'll just endure. It'll live on.
Yeah, I think we touched on it in the previous episode where it's like, with the gatekeeping and everything, it's like there keeps coming a new generation and they discover Titanic the way we discovered it. And it just keeps going round and round and round.
Yeah, it's a constant cycle. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you guys seen the Titanic guy on TikTok? Raf.
Afila or something like that. Rav Afila, I think his name is. I have.
He's popular.
Oh yeah. I mean, that just shows you that a guy who, he's not the TikTok generation. He's a millennial. You know, he's like the slightly older millennial. He's probably not much older than me, but you know, and yeah, he's been like a special guest in documentaries. Yeah, he's got a massive following. He does cameo, so people pay for him to send little messages to kids that watch him on TikTok. Like, and that just shows you, you know, the combination of he's also incredibly handsome. He's got a great voice. Is he Canadian? I think he's Canadian. I could be wrong.
What's this gentleman's name again?
I think he's that Titanic guy. I think that's his username.
Yeah, and his first name is
purposes, of course.
Rav, R-A-V, I think, Rav? But yeah, he's got a huge following. He basically just does, they're very casual, very kind of off the cuff. You know, he does the kind of the green screen background with whatever he's talking about behind him. And he's got the whole like one headphone hanging out, you know, the little microphone there. It's very casual, but clearly people are into this and he delivers little snippets of information in a very informal way. And so that just shows you that there are people on TikTok who are young. Some of them very young, maybe too young to be on an app like TikTok, but that's another story. And you know, they like it, they get it. You know, just with Callum saying there that there's a hunger for it, that kids he teaches, and you know, Callum teaches history. The school I'm working at, it's a primary school. I'll need to take a photo and send it to our group chat the next time I'm in on Monday, because so in Britain, I don't know about England, but in Scotland, definitely, there's like a big push on play-led learning. So, you know, primary one, primary two, it's starting to phase into primary three, which is your 5, 6, 7-year-old ranges. The kids basically come in and they play all day, but in the process of playing, they're learning. So, and a lot of it is these big wooden blocks that are all different shapes. And, you know, from that, you've got, you know, maths, you've got team building, you've got sharing, responsibility. It's, you know, it's cool, it's a thing. But as you walk into our school, there's a big massive notice board, and it's like, what have our P1s been doing, you know, this month? And one of the P1s, this 5-year-old, came in and said to the teacher, I want us to build Titanic. And she was like, okay, do you know how to do that? And he was like, yes. And off he went, and he got a little group assembled, and they got the wooden blocks, and they built a 4-funnel ship with these big wooden blocks. And so the teacher took photos and made it part of the notice board, so when parents come in, they can see it. And I looked at this, and I was, oh my God, like, I don't know where he saw it, but it's clearly imprinted. And that's much younger than I was when I first heard of Titanic. But there's clearly something about the story that, even though it's tragic, there's something about it that's still, like, cool enough to want to go into school and build it with your friends, like, as a five-year-old. I find that incredible. So, you know, Disney, like I said, owns the film. So by the time this five-year-old's old enough to go to the cinema with these friends, Disney will probably put it back in the cinema, and he can go and see it and be like... Or make a new one.
You can have Sharon's Rosa's mom.
Yeah, they can just remake the sinking scenes and add a little list, just a little tilt to the ship. I'm sure James Cameron hates the fact that his ship didn't have a list. But so yeah, super cool. Yeah, Disney, Titanic, love it. James Cameron should surrender to Netflix and just make a Titanic series. I just want him to. Because it wouldn't be as expensive as a film. He'd still make money. And he could finally fix the things that annoy him. So I know that he stays up at night annoyed at the little things that he didn't do. We all know it. Come on. Jim, give in.
I think it's like that with every project, because I know that's the same with me and my drawings. It's like, you know, they're projects on their own. And every time they're finished, I'm like, yeah, but I could have added more rivets on that thing. I could have done that detail. I could have had more people in the drawing and stuff like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. I think it's interesting. Like, people say, like, you are your own worst critic, as if it's like solely to that individual or, you know, a select few. But I think that's the case with everyone. I think everyone is their own worst critic, even if it's not about creative things. If it's just about something superficial, like you did your hair and you're like, oh, I'm not happy with that one strand. It's too straight, or it's weird. It's sitting weird. But no one would ever pick up on that. You would, but no one else would. So yeah. We love you, Jim, but do better. Right, so moving. Callum's like, rude.
That's Jim Cameron never coming on this podcast then.
I don't know.
I feel like we're growing up in the world in terms of cast, because, you know, you talked to the guy, Aaron, who helped with like raising the big piece, wasn't it? And I'm just thinking, like, okay, that's like, you know, way up on the list in terms of Titanic fame, I'd say. And also, like, the way we have been received on the internet is, like, weird, because when I was asked on coming on here, I was just like, oh, yeah, that would be fun. And, you know, now you have big Titanic names saying, yeah, I enjoyed listening to that podcast. And that's, like, huge.
Yeah, Joe, it's funny. I hadn't actually thought to reference... I sometimes do reference our last episode, but I forgot that our last episode was actually speaking to Bill Willard, who, if you've not seen our last episode, I can do this now. A little card thing will appear either here or above Presley. It'll be one of the two. I'll just do that. So click the little card and you can watch that episode with Bill, who was part of the team who helped raise the big piece of Titanic. And if you don't know what that is, it's a huge section of hull from the starboard side of the ship. You know, it's still got portholes, like glass intact. And it basically came off the ship when the ship broke. The team had a debate about raising either a boiler or this section of hull as a traveling, then to be static attraction. And they decided to raise the bit of the hull, which I think was the right move. I think, you know, that tells so much more of a story. You know, when you think of a porthole, you think of someone looking out of it, you know, all the rivets, you think someone, you know, multiple people hit them in, you know. And then the jagged edges, the fact that it's steel that tore off, it's so violent and destructive, and it's symbolic of not just hard work, but death. And the portholes, I think, are very symbolic of a voyage or a journey of individual people. It's very emotive. So speaking to Bill was incredible, and he actually reached out to us because I'd been promoting our episode that we did about grave robbing. Not knowing that he was so kind of interested in that facet of things, because anytime I'd seen Bill interviewed, they only ever spoke about the big piece, which, fair enough, the guy wrote a book about it, of course you're going to speak about that. But then he had seen myself posting on all of the Titanic Facebook groups kind of asking for people's opinions on this whole grave robbing idea, and he messaged me and he said, hey, have you guys done your episode yet? And I was like, wow, okay. I was like, no, we haven't, but we're about to do it, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, oh, cool, let me know when it's up. And I was like, interesting. So I said to him, I was like, would you be interested in almost doing like a part two of that discussion? And it was actually done the same day. You know, we did our episode, and then later that day, myself and Louis for a little while, we spoke to Bill. So we hadn't even uploaded the episode, but we'd done it. And we didn't tell him what anyone else thought. We just wanted to know his kind of thoughts. And he had a lot. You know, that guy has been called, I think he said, a ghoul. You know, he'd been called a ghoul for raising part of the ship. And he shared very similar kind of opinions to myself, that to call the wreck of the ship a gravesite would be like calling a plane crash a gravesite. You know, even after you've cleared the debris and everything else, you wouldn't actually call that. You'd call it an accident site or a disaster site, but you wouldn't call it a gravesite. So it was really interesting. And then, you know, you've got people that say, these people that went on the ship, they didn't want that to be their grave. So actually calling it a grave, is that not slightly disrespectful? Very nuanced, very complex discussion with, you know, Don Lynch, who's a very famous Titanic historian and also helped the 1907 film. He hates the fact that anything gets raised from the wreck site, including the big piece. And Bill being a big person in his field, Don, a huge person in his field, these guys have two completely different opinions, which I think is really, really interesting. So I think Bill appreciated being asked about something that he doesn't really get to talk about much. And the guy's a storyteller. So I just had to ask like half a question and he did his thing. And I just got to sit back and revel in the experience. It was awesome. But you're right. Yeah. What we're doing here is it's getting eyeballs. It's getting people talking, and not just people, like, you know, pretty cool people. We've already got, as you're all, I think, aware, Steve Hall, who's another very renowned Titanic historian. He's a consultant on the Titanic replica that's being built in China. He published and wrote co-authored a very prominent book about the switch theory. We've spoken and he would like to come on eventually. Louis is in contact with someone else. I'll not say it on here because I don't think Louis put it in the group chat. So I don't know if it's like set in stone, but we've got a couple of like pretty big guests coming up, which is really cool.
So James Cameron is a realistic goal in the future.
You know what? Never say never. And I don't think I'd hit record yet, but Lady Gaga's booked for in 2 weeks' time. So, you know, we're... And if that was before I hit, people are going to be like, what? But I don't even care. James Cameron, Lady Gaga, everyone. Everyone's coming on.
Sugar babes.
Yep. Absolutely.
Why not?
I hope all the comments on this now are just from like British or European people being like, sugar babes. Yes. that'd be so random. Super
push
random.
Push the button.
Yeah. Oh, push the button. Such a good song. I think that's like Presley sugar babe songs. But Presley, do you know this song? Do you know this song? Sebastian just I don't know where Sebastian's little face went. This happened when we were speaking to Bill. Louis just vanished, and I knew it wasn't like a tech difficulty because he'd gotten up from his chair when we were speaking to Bill, and then his screen went off, and I was like, okay, but he was still there. Like he could have come in at any point. And basically, while we were recording, Louis's like whole like his in-laws, I think, came to the door, and he was like, "Oh, okay." So the whole time he's got Bill Willard, like this really prominent Titanic guy, just on his computer chatting away to me, and I think Louis had his headphones on, and he's like making his in-laws drinks and stuff like for like quite a while, and it was fine. Me and Bill were just talking, and then eventually Louis came back and sat down. And was like, I'm so sorry, like half of my family appeared at my front door and I had to like be host. And I was like, that's a bless. That's, you know, it's because he lives in London. So I think the apartment they've got, it's like, you know, you can't just disappear to like a separate room to do it, you know, because places are a bit smaller. But that was funny. Bill just laughed. He's Southern. He's got, you know, good sense of humor. And he was like, whatever, it is what it is. Like, but yeah, so... But to this episode, we are now going to discuss what do we think, if anything, could have prevented the Titanic tragedy. I'm really curious to, I had a few people message me and say things that they think might prevent it. Nothing too outlandish, you know, it was things that I was like, yep, I could see that. I'm not looking for, I'd be amazed if I heard something that I've never thought of. But yeah, I'm really curious to hear what we think might have prevented this. I'm a fair ruler. Would anyone like to start? I won't just, because one time I did that, I was like, you go first. And then, you know, they were like, oh, I'm not ready. And I don't want to like force people to go, but would anyone like to start us off? Callum.
I feel like I'm in school putting my hand up. So I've got a list, as I always did when I was last on and ranting about Channel 4 documentaries. No, Channel 5 documentaries.
I remember that was such a good little moment. Like, you know, that was a nice little, I liked that, I enjoyed that. You're now our like resident list guy.
I've got my green post-it note and I'm like, I'm ready for it.
We love to see it.
So without kind of stealing anyone else's thunder, the only one I could see ever changing things, really, most of the other things were kind of set in stone, but the kind of near collision in Southampton that delayed things by just a couple of hours, that's the only thing I can see, maybe other than maybe the coal strike, that's the only thing I could think of that would have changed things. Everything else is really circumstantial. Had that ship not been there at the right time, again, it's probably circumstantial again, but that's the only thing I can think of really that might have changed things.
So do you mean if it hadn't happened?
Yeah, if Titanic hadn't had to stop, if it didn't have to wait for those couple of hours whilst they essentially check that they didn't get rammed or they were doing the ramming, maybe things would have been different. Maybe that iceberg would have just continued moseying on down the Atlantic and we wouldn't be here talking about this. We'd be talking about the Lusitania or the Empress of Ireland, something like that.
And this is for those... Yeah, that, do you know, it's one I had not considered. I hadn't actually considered a lack of delay in the voyage. I suppose it could work either way. So let's say, for instance, so what Callum's referencing here, if for those that aren't aware, is when Titanic was leaving Southampton, the wake of the ship, the currents that it was creating in the water as such a large vessel in Southampton, it drew in a slightly smaller ship called the SS New York, which is all kinds of foreshadowing. And the ship's stern started to swing out and nearly hit the Titanic. It didn't. There are photos that were taken of this incident. And, you know, so like Callum said, it did slightly delay the departure from Southampton, but eventually Titanic did go on its way. I can't remember if it was a passenger, a witness at Southampton, or just someone way after the fact that wrote that it was almost as if the ship New York, bear in mind Titanic was going to New York, it was almost as if the ship was saying, don't go, don't do it, which is just so bizarre. It could have been any ship. It could have been called like the SS Sugar Babes, like, but it was called the SS New York, like
SS Daddy.
SS Daddy. Like, it could have been anything, but it just wasn't. Like, it was the SS New York. Like, that's just insane. So yeah. But then even thinking, so that, yeah, that delayed the voyage, and I forget the rate at which icebergs travel, but they do travel at like a fair, you know, not like super fast, but they move, you know. So would this iceberg have been at that exact point? It wouldn't have. But in terms of thinking how far away from that point would it have been, it might have just been enough that if they turned, those few inches or centimeters could have made all the difference. Even if it had hit, but it had breached the first three or four compartments, that would have been enough for Titanic to stay afloat. It was the fifth compartment that was the fatal kind of blow. So that, yeah, that's a brilliant point. That's one I just had not thought of at all. God, I need to start making lists.
Yeah, that was a good one.
I know, maybe this is why I'm not, you know, but yeah, absolutely.
This is why you're a host.
Do you know what? Yeah, this is why I'm a host. Like, I throw on a shirt and I speak
you let everyone do the
up here, it's all just air. But yeah, that's, I like that a lot. But then even thinking if the ship had hit the Titanic, and say it was delayed even longer, that also might have made the difference. Either way. So thinking, you know, if that hadn't happened, if the SS New York had not been berthed there at the time, if the Titanic had gone out without incident, was actually ahead of schedule, or thinking if it had hit the SS New York and they had to go down and check, was there any damage? So say it took 6 hours to assess that, or just, you know, make sure things were okay, or 4 hours or 3 hours, or even 1 hour, because it wasn't long at all. Either end of the spectrum could have made all the difference, but the fact that there was a slight incident, there was a slight delay, and that, you know, yeah, fascinating. I'm going to find out. I think now, actually, I really want to find out at the rate at which icebergs move, you know, how quickly can they move? Because I've heard this before. It's one of those things that it's kind of, I knew it at one point and it's escaped my mind, but there was a point in time where I did know roughly the rate at which an iceberg can travel and the open ocean. So yeah, Callum, thank you for that. That was a really good point. Okay, so who would like to go next? Who would like to give us what they think would help to prevent the sinking? And it doesn't need to be one thing. It could just be, you know, it could be multiple factors that you can think of. It could be a kind of a deadly cocktail of things that you think if this or this hadn't happened, or this and this had happened. You know, I, you know what, I'll go. I kind of thought that I could pin down something that could have prevented it, but actually, maybe I'm much more of a nihilist than I give myself credit for. I actually think there was no way to prevent it. I actually think it was always going to happen. But then part of me thinks that maybe it was always going to happen because it had to happen. Which is not only nihilistic, but also really sad that, you know, to think that all those people had to die so that there wouldn't be another Titanic ever, really. Or not on the scale that the Titanic was. You know, I think we've definitely mentioned the Costa Concordia. I think that's in modern times. Well, to be fair, there have been other slightly older kind of ship disasters, perhaps not running aground with, you know, I think Costa Concordia was 32 people that lost their lives in a similar fashion of sinking. You know, there have been ships that have gone on fire, there have been ships that have capsized, but in terms of, you know, running aground and that kind of style of sinking, the Costa Concordia is the most kind of modern example. But I really struggled to think of a way that we could have prevented it, because a lot of the modern ideas, you know, the coal fire, for instance, you know, I had quite a few people message me when I was promoting this episode on Instagram. I had quite a few people say, oh, well, if the coal fire hadn't happened, or if they put it out sooner, then the metal of the hull would be stronger. But actually, there have been lots of studies to show that the coal fire wouldn't have weakened the steel, that the hull was fine. But again, this is one of these things that it's a conspiracy. It's like, it's bordering on theory and conspiracy, because it's not fake. There was a fire. We know that. You know, the reason the ship had such a huge list to port when it entered Ireland on the 11th of April was because they were shifting all of the coal to the port side away from the fire on the starboard side, because they didn't want that to ignite. Whereas the switch theory is a conspiracy, because there's nothing to ground it in reality. The coal fire, there was a coal fire, but there's no proof or evidence to show that it did actually affect the steel of the hull. And actually, people have theorized and have proven that if it had been hot enough to affect the hull, the swimming pool, which was directly above, the water would have been boiling. It actually would have been like a kettle, like bubbling, and like you wouldn't have been able to go in the pool because the fire would have had to have been that hot in order to affect the metal of the ship. So, and even this idea of, oh, it was too hot and then it cooled down really quickly, which made it brittle. Nah, not buying it. It's just, there's nothing to prove that. So all these little things, and you know, there's been theories of the captain being drunk. He never drank on voyages. And on the evening of April 14th, he dined in the a la carte restaurant with quite a large party of people. And multiple people said that he was almost peer pressured into taking a drink of whiskey or port or something. And he took like a sip as like a bit of a, oh, okay, if you insist. And he took a sip and then he left after that. Because I think he knew if he stayed, it would just, you know, they'd egg him on more and more. So, you know, and even if he was drunk, we've said before, he was in bed. He wasn't in charge of the ship at the time. So he could have been as drunk as a skunk and like in his bed, you know, he wasn't actually in charge of the ship. You know, Murdoch was at that time. So, you know, we had Robert Hitchens at the wheel. We had William Murdoch, who was, you know, the officer on duty at the time. So Smith is out of the equation, you know. Beforehand, you know, in terms of slowing down when they have reports of ice, that wasn't procedure, which nowadays we might think is ridiculous, but we only think that because of Titanic. It just wasn't procedure to slow down because of ice, and that's on smaller ships. Titanic was the biggest ship and the most, you know, technologically advanced ship. So why would they feel like they had to slow down? You know, if tramp steamers and smaller ships and trawlers, if they weren't slowing down, why would Titanic? It doesn't make any sense. Whereas the Olympic, you know, after the sinking of its sister ship Titanic, I bet the Olympic slowed down. Absolutely. Because you've already got those instant kind of ripple effects happening from the sinking. So I kind of went through all these little things. I was like, I can't think of anything that would prevent it. So I personally, I'm a pessimist. I don't think you could prevent it. And my reasoning for that, to make myself feel better, I almost start to go into like weirdy woo territory and think it was unpreventable because it had to happen. That's my reasoning. Anyway.
Right.
That sound like if not Titanic, then it would have been a different ship. It might have been Olympic, but who knows? You know, those conditions weren't uncommon, and you know, as ships were getting larger and larger and larger, it was bound to happen sooner or later that they'd have an incident at sea. So I kind of see that if not Titanic, then it's definitely someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like to piggyback on that, I think that had it not happened, it would have been the Lusitania or Britannic or even like the Wilhelm Gustav in World War II. Like, I think that would have been, more people would know about that if Titanic hadn't happened.
Yes, 100%. Like, it's incredible, even for a Titanic enthusiast, there are, I can't even remember the names of them, that just shows you, though. I think I mentioned one of them on a previous episode, and we spent a good 5 or 10 minutes saying, like, oh, was it this ship? Oh, no, because there's a YouTube channel I watch, Fascinating Horror, very good YouTube channel, you should subscribe. And it's basically disasters that have happened over, you know, any time frame really. And they're very short videos, you know, 10 minutes max, but a lot of them tend to be ship sinkings. And there's ones that I've never heard of, or ones that I have heard of, but I've actually not done the research to know how they even sank. So yeah, Presley, you're totally right that it could have been any ship, and the only reason that we really think of this is yeah, because of the Titanic, but it could have been any other one. I think what's interesting though is it sank in such calm conditions, and so there could have been every possibility to save everyone. And this idea that it was all alone, you know, the Atlantic Oceans was always had traffic, you know, there were always ships around. I remember when I first heard that survivors actually saw lights of another ship on the horizon. I remember being shocked by that. And that was only maybe 4 or 5 years ago. It wasn't that long ago. And it was something I just was not aware of. So I think it's a perfect recipe of things that makes the Titanic so memorable. Because, you know, going back to those five-year-olds that are building a wooden Titanic in my school that I work in, if it had been the Lusitania disaster, which is during a war, is torpedoed by enemies during a war, sinks in like 18 minutes on its side, would they be building a model of that? I don't know. I don't know. Maybe if the Titanic hadn't happened, something so dramatic and such a quick sinking, you know, something that was so enraging that people made posters about it, you know, to get people to join the war effort, you know, maybe that would actually be, you know, because I think actually if someone made a poll of the most iconic sinkings, Lusitania would be pretty high up there. So yeah, that's a good point, Presley. But so just to also piggyback off what you were saying, do you think there's anything that could have been done, Presley, that would have prevented the sinking of Titanic?
No, I don't. And like, normally I'm so much of an optimist, but I struggled a little bit with this topic. I also made myself a list. And I kind of took it, instead of like preventing the sinking, what could have prevented such a great loss of life? I don't know. That made more sense to me. And like, I had my, like, the things you always hear, more lifeboats, binoculars, things like that. But I think that something about this time, which like gets mentioned, is people were arrogant. And there was like this time of like, wow, like we have this really awesome ship and we're sailing and man is conquering technology and iron ships. And I think that it had to happen. There had to be some amount of humbling, which is terrible to say, but I think that's how I feel.
It's a really good point. It's a super good point. And actually, I like that way of approaching it, because the question was actually vague enough. I didn't intend it as that, but actually I can see why the question of could this have been prevented? It's like, well, what's being asked? Mm-hmm. You know, is it the loss of life? Is it the sinking? Is it the glorification of it? Is it the romanticizing of it? You know, what is it about Titanic that could have been prevented? So I really like the approach that you took there. That's and yeah, even the lifeboat thing. I had someone very recently message me, kind of unprompted, but I was like, bring it on, saying, you know, the Californian was a very small ship and people don't realize that. So even if it was the Californian, which people on the Titanic were seeing, which it was, you know, people nowadays like to say it was
some Norwegian ship called the Samson or something.
Yeah, it's like the Californian crew are saying, we watched a ship set off fireworks, but we don't think it was Titanic. And then you've got people on Titanic saying, we watched a ship watch us and do nothing. And it's like, you know, so they're probably talking about each other. I think that's safe to assume. And yeah, I think that, you know, so this person messaged me and said, the ship, even if it had come to Titanic's aid, it wouldn't have been able to house all the people, like 2,200 passengers. It wouldn't have been able to do that. And it's like, well, it would have been able to house the ones that eventually ended up in the water, potentially, and the rest could have sat in the boats and waited till the Carpathia came. You know, anything's better than having 1,500 people swimming about in freezing cold water. Like, anything's better than that. Even if you've got 20 people that it's like, could you just chill in the water for like 2 minutes and wait? Like, you know, raise your hand if you're like an Olympic swimmer and like 20 people raise their hands, like, right, can you just go in the water and do some laps for like 30 seconds while the Carpathia like parks up? Like, yeah, like anything's better than what happened. So these people that are defending these like dead people that didn't ask to be defended, like that had their day in court and were seen as like actually guilty potentially, like, or liable or whatever, like that happened. They made a series about it with Paul McGann. I forgot what it's called, but yeah,
that's like, really good one.
It's very good. So you're right, Presley. Could something have happened to have prevented the loss of life? Yes, but could something have happened to prevent sinking? No. And in a way, and it's weird to say it, and it's like, we're not saying it's good that it happened. We're saying that there were positive outcomes of it happening, which are two very different things. You know, no one would ever say it's good that it sank, but we would say that there were good results of the sinking. Because even the fact that, like, the crew of the Titanic and every other ship were like, we could have a lifeboat drill on the first night, or we could have a party. Like, that's, it's like, that's, we like a party, we love a party, but we could also have a lifeboat drill. Like, that's, you know, we could do that first and then we could have a party. Like, the fact that that was so relaxed. But then after the Titanic, instantly it was lifeboat drill, then party. You know, just little things like that. So yeah, I like your approach. Thank you.
I was thinking, like, potentially under that, like, how would we prevent a greater loss of life? What if they had done a lifeboat drill that day? Do you think it would have made a difference in the overall organization of people evacuating? That was kind of my, like, what if scenario to this answer.
Oh,
I think it's likely, though.
We've got a spin-off question. I want, like, a
dang,
like, you know, like in a game show when, like, there's like do-do-do-do, like, you know, so now really tense moment, tense sub question that Presley has just brought to my brain, which I haven't really thought before. If we'd had a lifeboat drill before the ship even left Southampton, or say actually when it left Cherbourg, before it left there, Cherbourg, do we think that more people would have gone to lifeboats? Do we think more people would have been saved? Yeah. If there'd been,
I would like to ask the audience,
would the general organization of people getting into lifeboats been more organized? Are you more likely to question, like, is this a drill if you already did a drill earlier that day?
Yes. Yes. Such. Are you going to trust the lifeboats more if you've already sat in one? You know?
Yeah.
Because people were, even the crew didn't even know if the davits could handle the weight of the boats. The crew, let alone the passengers. So if the crew have already used the davits and, you know, uncovered the lifeboats and done all that, so they're a bit quicker doing it because they've got to do it 4 days later. And if the passengers have already sat in these boats and they know they're not just going to buckle the minute you put a foot in it, yeah, you're right. A lot more people, because the reason people say, oh, well, why didn't they put more people in these lifeboats? People didn't want to go in them. That's a big part of the reason why there was only 700 people in the lifeboats, was because a lot of people were like, nah, man. Like,
that little thing that buckles and creaks? Nah, man, I'm good.
Yeah, if you've got more faith in this wooden structure in front of you, then yeah, you're going to sit in it. Okay, it's dark and you're in the middle of the ocean, which psychologically they're also going to play factors. You know, you're not going to equate the middle of the Atlantic at like 1 a.m. with being, you know, being able to see France, you know, just over there, and, you know, there's a little ferry ship also in the water. Like, those two things are totally different. Like, but you're going to have a bit more faith. So even if it was like 900 people got in instead of 700, like, that's still 200 more. So that's a really good question, Presley. Wow, that's, yeah, good. Yeah, wow. Yeah, I think more people would have. If they'd done the drill, the officers would have been quicker at unloading the lifeboats and preparing them, and they would have been, yeah, more receptive to actually getting into the boats.
Communication probably would have been better, because one of the things I thought of when I was like, okay, so what can you do about in this sort of situation? And a lot of the things is just like, you know, I don't know if it's a bad omen or if it's just, because I always think of Titanic as like dominoes falling. It's one thing after another. And one of the things during the sinking was definitely lack of communication. I think I mentioned that what I would have done with language barrier, myself being Danish. But there's also the thing of the order of women and children first being misinterpreted as only. Because I think if you were, you know, would have had a more like organized structure and getting people into the boats, you could have filled them to capacity. And I think with the boats in total, it's like some, I know the collapsibles probably would have been questionable at best, but still all the boats combined is still like some 1,200 people capacity,
yeah,
sort of. And that still would have reduced the numbers of death, like at least with, I wouldn't say significant, but at least with some.
That's a good point you bring up, that on the two sides of the ship, you've got light hauler on the port side, You know, he famously ordered the crew to go down and open the column. I know, light taller. Yep.
I spent a third of my dissertation at uni laying into Lightoller. I've got beef.
See if Lightoller came back to life, like Jesus, if he rose again, I'd buy him a pint, and then when he'd finished it, I'd smash the pint and stab him with the glass. I honestly, the guy, he's a hero. Like, what he did at Dunkirk was, like, amazing, but you're so... It's like such a
difference between him and...
Yeah, like, so he ordered the men to go down and open the gangway door on the side of the ship, on the port side. You know, this big door that led into the D-deck of the Grand Staircase, which, it's debatable, did it actually flood the ship more? Probably not, because by the time the external part of the ship is to the water level, so the door, the bottom of the door is here, that's the ocean, the water inside is kind of roughly at the same place. So the water inside is probably just getting to the base of the D-deck reception staircase. The ocean's maybe like there. So, okay, the water gets in there. So yeah, you might say like...
spillover effect.
Yeah, yeah. You might have had like 2 or 3 minutes extra, like if that, 5 max, but it's not going to make a big, big difference. And again, if people aren't willing to get into the lifeboats, you don't need those extra 5 minutes. It's just pointless. But yeah, Lightoller was an interesting fellow, but he's in the port side and he took it very literally. He was like, women and children only. Murdoch, who was on the starboard side, you know, in the 97 film and, well, every film prior, we see Esme getting into a lifeboat and you can kind of see the bridge and the wheelhouse in the background. And it's on that side, so that's on the starboard side. And he took the order as women and children first. And if there are any men, then they could get in. And even when it comes to Esme, you know, he apparently was ordered into the boat by Murdoch. Murdoch was like, get in now, I'm telling you to, or I'll push you in. And he was Scottish. So when a Scottish person says, do what I'm telling you right now, or else, you fucking do it. Just do it. Like,
you're a wee bastard.
Yeah, so Esme was like, cool, awesome. I'd rather die in the water than be killed by a Scotsman. So he got into lifeboat.
I think that's the best like ratio at any in any situation.
Yeah.
Killed by a Scot or make it out alive, you know.
Yeah. So even that misunderstanding of language, of just general orders. Yeah, if they'd had a lifeboat drill, but then that irks me because I've been on a cruise. It costs a lot. I wouldn't say it's like a once in a lifetime thing. But at that, when I was that age, because I was quite young, it was like I was like, I'm never going to be able to do this again. But actually, as an adult, it's not as unaffordable as you might think, depending on where you go. And it was amazing. It was incredible. Like, I love being like, there was a day where it was you're only at sea that day, so there were no stops. That was my favorite day. Like, just all day, all you saw around you and in front of you and behind you was the ocean in the sky, and that was just incredible. It was just beautiful. But then there's also this sense, especially if you're obsessed with a ship that sank 100 years ago, there's this sense of when you see land, at least you know that potentially you could be helped if something went wrong. But on the cruise, the crew know what to do. Even when there hasn't been a sinking, even before a drill, they still know their muster stations, they still know what they need to tell passengers. Whereas on Titanic, it's really sad that it was all on the fly. So there wasn't even this preconceived notion of what to do in a disaster. It was all very spur of the moment. And if you happen to be told that we're sinking, then you know. And if you don't get told that, then you don't. Which is really unfortunate. You know, there was no tannoy system. You know, Captain Smith had a gold megaphone, which was, or a brass megaphone, which was found on the seafloor. And, you know, shouting through a megaphone is all well and good, but that's not a tannoy system. So until those kind of things were introduced, it's pointless. You know, the amount of people that I think must have still been asleep in their cabins probably and woke up when it was too late, that's a real possibility.
That's like a horrific image, just imagining, you know, waking up in your bunk bed and there's floor coming under your door, water coming under your door on the floor, and you're like, what the fuck is going on? And by that time, you know, the deck you're on might already be flooded to a point where you can't get out.
Yeah, and what do you do in that scenario? I mean, the stewards are told to go and knock doors. How many doors is that? Like, that's a lot of doors.
Yeah, I mean, Titanic might be a small ship to modern standards, but it's a big ship back then, and you can even, I can't remember who it was that said, like, you know, he thought he was certain he almost could be lost before they reached New York, because it was like endless corridors, and at the end of that corridor, that's another corridor going down that way, and you know, you could easily get lost. So that's like, I would say 1,000 doors, maybe more.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, completely.
Doors, actually.
And well, Sebastian, you'd already kind of mentioned the kind of language barrier or the kind of the misunderstanding of orders. I was going to say quite simple orders, but we don't know what Smith said. So maybe he did give unclear instruction. Who can say? But Lightoller is still a bit of a, I'll leave that there. I might do a whole episode on Lightoller. In fact, that's what I'll do. That's the next one.
Yeah, because we're just gonna fill this one up with Lightoller.
I've actually got an idea for the next episode. I'll suggest it to you guys. But if we think that a whole episode on Lightoller would be better, which I think it might be actually, because we've mentioned him a few times in this one, we'll do that. But I think just a whole episode, Charles Herbert Lightoller. That would be pretty spicy.
Yeah, going like this, we're going to have a light hole at Yar at the end of the podcast.
Yeah.
Oh, here he is again. Chip.
oh, completely. Yeah. I mean, I basically, my video essay I did about was the breakup covered up, essentially boiled down to, you know, too long, didn't watch. Essentially, it's, yes, it did break, but the reason that we didn't think it broke was because Lightoller was the most senior surviving officer and was so desperate to please the White Star Line that he just lied for them. Essentially, that's kind of what it comes down to, because there's no way that, you know, when you look at his testimony, you know, if someone, say, from like 9/11 was trying to escape from like one of the rooms that the plane hit, and you know, they're trying to evacuate a room that's full of smoke, fire, debris, and they're trying to get down these staircases, and it's dark and it's noisy, but they're able to tell you like every minute detail, every little detail, any modern person would go, you're full of shit. You know that? You wouldn't know that. How do you know that? You were busy trying not to die. You were looking down the stairs. So how did you know that that was happening? Like Lightoller saying that he was dragged down by two vents, not one, but two vents, underwater, and then climbed on top of an upside down lifeboat. But while he's doing all this and he's underwater and he's doing that and it's a bit dark, he's able to watch the ship the whole time and see that it sank intact. Nah, mate. You're a hero, but you're a dick. Nah. Like, honestly. So see, if Murdoch had survived, I feel like Murdoch would have been really like straight-laced. He'd have just told it as it was. And I feel like he'd have just walked up to Lightoller in the court and like backhanded him. I feel like Murdoch would have just been like, nah, you're a liar. Okay, it's official. I'm writing that now. Next episode.
Murdoch definitely had that no nonsense vibe.
Lightoller.
Finally, someone 100 years later is exposing Lightoller.
Cancelled.
Boys. Oh my god, there's the
getting
thumbnail.
Our hands dirty on this one.
Charles Lightoller. Cancelled.
Lightoller cancelled.
That's excellent. But so Lightoller appreciation / cancellation aside, Sebastian, do you think there was anything that could have prevented the sinking of Titanic, or as Presley put it, the loss of life, you know, the gravitas of the sinking?
Well, I already touched a bit on the lifeboat, so I won't go through that one again. But yeah, you know, coming into this podcast, I definitely also had some thoughts, but it's like, you know, I think I'm on the same level as with you and Presley, whereas I don't think it's going to be avoided, because, you know, in my lifelong passion until now, you know, there keep being something that just looks like, you know, pitch black, the horizon is melting into the ocean. You can't really see until the iceberg is like too close to get away from it. So it's interesting when Callum brought up, like, even beforehand, because with my timeline, in my head, it doesn't really start until we're like 30 minutes, 40 minutes away from the iceberg. So I thought that was like really interesting. But yeah, because, you know, I'm definitely, I guess, the one when people saying, oh, they could have had binoculars. Yeah, but they wouldn't have helped them. And yeah, the conditions just weren't there. And with the Californian, I think there's like a whole like thing written about it, because they were stationary, so the steam pressure wouldn't have been up. So sure, they would have been able to come to the aid, but it might have been too late then, because they still have to make the ship move. It's not just like a petrol engine or something fueled by diesel where you just turn a button and then boom, it roars into life. It takes time. So yeah, had to happen, I guess, is my sum up.
Yeah, and the binoculars, it's really funny, and this is random, okay? It's slightly related because it's to do with like the ocean or fish more specifically. So I used to work in Walmart, or Asda, as we know in Britain. Or, well, it's now Asda Walmart because Walmart brought it over. But and I worked on the deli counter. So I sold like meat, we made pizza, sold fish. I know how to fillet a fish. That's just one of those random life skills that I now know. So like when I'm working in a school, in the back of my brain, I still know how to fillet a fish. That's like just a thing. But we were always told by customers when we were serving the fish, oh, do you not put on gloves, like latex or rubber gloves? And it's like, no, we're actually told not to. We're told it's less hygienic, because if you're wearing gloves, you're not as inclined to wash your hands, because you think, oh, I'm wearing gloves, it's fine. Whereas if you're using your bare hands, you're going to constantly be washing your hands after every little interaction with whatever you're touching. And the reason I mention that, pretty random, but you'll see why, is because people always say, well, the Reginald Lee and Frederick Fleet in the Crow's Nest should have had binoculars, but actually standard practice wasn't to be using them constantly. They could use them if they wanted to, if it was misty or if they felt their vision was impaired for some reason, or if they were bored and thought, let's play with binoculars. It's good to have them. And of course, there's the whole thing of they didn't have the key for them, which is true. They didn't have the key for it. And there were binoculars, but they didn't have access to them, which is really silly. Some officers did have them, but they didn't give them to the people in the Crow's Nest, which actually further shows that it wasn't essential that they had binoculars. It was kind of just, it was there. It was like coleslaw. You know, you've got your dinner, you've got the Titanic, you've got the open ocean, that's your main. The binoculars are like a dip or like a coleslaw or a side. It's like, it's nice to have. You don't have to have it because you've got the Titanic. Like, come on. But it wasn't standard practice to use binoculars. You didn't have to. Just like in working in a supermarket, you didn't have to wear gloves. If you had like a condition where you couldn't touch raw fish with your bare hands, then yeah, absolutely, wear the gloves. But actually, standard practice is you do not wear the gloves. It's seen as less hygienic. So on Titanic and around that time, using binoculars was not standard practice. You could use them if you really wanted to, but you'd probably be questioned when you got back, like, is your eyesight up to scratch? You know, are you okay? Are you still able to work for the White Star Line? You know, if you're looking really far ahead, you might be seeing past the thing that's in your path. And Tim Moulton, you know, he is the guy that kind of came up with this cold water mirage theory, which there's a lot of credence to it. But again, because we weren't there, we'll never really know. But basically, the amount of people saying from that time that it was the clearest night they had ever seen. You know, the amount of survivors that say, I'd never seen so many stars. The officers before the ship hit the iceberg were saying, I could see like so far ahead. Like, it was insane. It was like the clearest, it was like a dream. Like, I just couldn't believe how far ahead I could see. And it was the same for the guys in the Crow's Nest, which was why they didn't feel the need to go down to Murdoch and say, William, can we borrow your binoculars? Like, they didn't feel the need because they could see so far ahead. But the issue with that is, with this cold water mirage, like any mirage, but this is at nighttime in very cold conditions. The colors that you get where the, like Sebastian kind of mentioned, where the water meets the sky, there is a slight blur, but it's very far away. But the color that it kind of makes, sadly, is a very similar color that white ice makes in dark, this kind of grayish, blackish blue. So that all kind of made the very same color. So they weren't able to see the outline of something until it was far too close to them, sadly. Which, yeah, it's sad, but just to kind of put that out there. So again, I had people mention me say, if they had binoculars, they'd have been able to. It's like, I see
well,
why.
Yeah, because you mentioned the stars, and I think it's Fleet's own quote that says, like, he noticed an absence of stars. And I remember that that one, there was like an audio thing I heard from Night to Remember, where it was like, he said something like, two tables put together, that's like the size he estimated it was at the time he spotted it. And it was only like when it became, you know, towards them and became bigger, then he realized, oh shit, this is a bird, ding, ding, ding.
Yeah.
So he wouldn't really have had a chance to spot it beforehand. And that's why I'm a firm believer in the cold mirage theory, because it makes sense that if all you can see is like a ocean of stars, basically, and then you notice like this area where there isn't stars, then that's your only like clue that something is coming towards you that may be a danger to the ship.
Yeah, completely. I've never heard of his account of... sorry, Callum just messaged the group thing. I just saw that. That made me laugh. So, yeah, I've never read... Did you say that was in A Night to Remember?
The book by...
Walter Lord, yeah. It's one I've never read because I just don't read. Anyone who's watched more than one of these...
I heard the audio version, so...
Right, okay, I need to
listen. It's on YouTube, actually. It's a nice thing to have running in the background when you're doing something else.
Oh.
That's so smart. I've been trying to get through A Night to Remember, and it is difficult.
It's a long
Presley, we should both start it at the same time and see, like, how far we get, and we can talk about it. Like,
audio book club!
Yep.
Book club.
Book. Oh my god, yes. I mean, there's the Titanic book club, but we can start like a like mini book club of like two people, like Aaron and Presley, both listening to A Night to Remember. Excellent. I love that.
It's like the Holy Bible of Titanic, and I haven't read it.
I mean, yeah, it literally is. Like, people say that On a Sea of Glass, which I'm working my way through just now, very intermittently, but I'm doing it. That's like the modern day Bible. But I think the luxury that Walter Lord has, he was able to speak to people that were still alive, who had been on the ship. You know, it was, you know, 40 years later, but they were still alive. And yeah, I think it's a must read, because even though people have, their memories aren't infallible. You know, their memories will be, they could have false memories. They could misremember things. They could be light toller and just outright lie to keep a job. But it's still worth reading, because, you know, it's like investigating. You read all of these little things, and then in 2012, which was when On a Sea of Glass was first published, I believe, or just after that, I'm not sure. I think it was 2012. You know, you've got this modern day equivalent, which is seen as like the highest kind of pedigree of Titanic research, and kind of merging the two and saying, right, okay, so Officer Lowe, Fifth Officer Lowe, said that he went under the propellers when he was asked to row from the port side to the starboard side. But then actually On a Sea of Glass and many other people kind of since then have said, well, at that time when the boat was lowered, roughly kind of give or take 5 minutes, the propellers would never have been that high out of the water, and probably were never that high out of the water for the lifeboat and people to go under them. So maybe he meant this. So, you know, you're taking kind of little bits from everything and you're kind of working it and you're finding like a middle ground. But yeah, it's, but I find fascinating. I think that's one of the things that continues to fascinate me about Titanic, is that even at this age, and having been obsessed for as long as I've been, which is like, you know, probably 20 years or just, you know, just less, maybe 18 years, that I'm still learning new things, or I'm kind of reaffirming things I thought I knew, but from a different lens. You know, I'm actually reading a survivor testimony, or I'm reading an expert's opinion of that testimony that I always believed in, and I've got this historian saying, actually, they might be wrong, but this might be why they're wrong. I find it fascinating.
I've had a similar experience with learning more about the Titanic, because I think, like, one of the first facts I heard of was, like, in some sort of history magazine section where we're like, oh, when they put the engines in reverse, which we now know they didn't, the center propeller would stop or something like that, and that would be like, wow. And then I remember when I heard about the Cold Mirage Theory, when I got the Smithsonian documentary and DVD, and that was like, you know, I was like, what? Oh, this makes so much sense. And that's sort of the thing, like, that keeps coming something to the table, so to speak, new facts. And that's why it's also important to, like, be, I guess, open-minded, because I know, you know, it could be a bit weird if there's, like, a satanic fact I've known for, like, my whole life, and then someone, you know, actually says, well, they've just discovered that this weren't true and stuff like that. It rocks your world or shakes your world or whatever. But it's a fact that they keep finding new things. And they mentioned that on one of the live streams, I think on the Sea Glass live stream, where, you know, now they discover that this happened on this side of the ship, and now that happened on that side of the ship. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think the general consensus then is that the Titanic sank. It was probably always going to sink. But from that came some benefits and some positive repercussions, which saved countless other lives to this day. You know, we don't know when safety regulations at sea would have got to the point that they are now if Titanic hadn't happened. Because let's say a ship had sank and there had been one factor that was the key cause of, you know, death. They might have changed one aspect of it, but they might not have changed all of it. Whereas the Titanic sank in, like, the perfect conditions, so that you were able to see kind of like, okay, right, we should change kind of all of it. And, you know, things have adapted, you know, fire regulation. I can imagine that quite a few ships, because they're essentially big tins. So when there's a fire, it just goes wild, and it really heats up so rapidly because it's just all metal. So whereas the Titanic, there wasn't really, well, there was the coal fire. That was a thing. But, you know, the Titanic sank, and we think that good things came out of that. Quite a few of us, actually, more of us than I thought, think that there was no way to prevent it. But Callum brought up the very good point of, if it hadn't been delayed, or kind of bouncing off that, if it had been much more delayed, the iceberg might not have reached that vicinity of the Atlantic, or it would have passed already. Even if it had just been by a few inches, that could have been all that it needed. To make much more of a body swerve away from it, which, yeah, like I think Sebastian said, like yourself, I'd been thinking kind of like 40 minutes prior to the collision, or like an hour at most, you know, earlier that day, or even just during the voyage, but not the departure. So I liked that. And then Presley thinking, you know, preventing the loss of life. So we've all approached it from different ways, which I like as well. And that's, you know, that's what I love about having you guys. I mean, I love you all anyway, but I love the fact that you all bring something different to the table, that we're all thinking about this in really different ways. And we might not think it's creative, but when we come together, it is creative, because we're all individual and we all have our individual kind of view on it. And yeah, it's great. I love it. Is there anything else that anyone would like to add before we wrap up? No, I've got shaking heads for everyone on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. Apparently, I've got shaking heads. And if you're on YouTube, you could just see three shaking heads. Well, this has been great, and yeah, the next episode will absolutely be Charles Herbert Lightoller.
Cancelled.
Oh my god, yeah. I'm gonna have to think.
It needs to be like on the thumbnail, just like across the screen.
I'm gonna look at every BuzzFeed thumbnail and just copy one of theirs and like make it the most like salacious thumbnail I've ever made in my whole life. Like, yeah, I'm just gonna make it like so tacky. I'm pretty sure his like great niece or whatever is on Facebook, I'll have her on the episode as well, just to like give it some credence. I'll just be like, could you come on and like just make sure that we're not like totally like OTT? But yeah, I think that would be a very interesting episode, because I think some people will defend him for reasons, and I think some people will not lambast him, but will see the flaws in his account and the potential persuasions that might have made his account so like perfect, you know, that, you know, I think that will be a very interesting episode. And if it's not, you know, I've always said, if there's ever an episode that just didn't work, I just wouldn't upload it, or I'd say, you know, we'll do something with it, but, you know, it can become a TikTok, you know, I can just cut it into little, the bits that were interesting, but I don't think that will ever happen, because Titanic's just so interesting, and there's so much to say. Yeah, I think the Lightoller episode will be wild, and I'm excited for it.
Oh, I see what you did there.
What did wild. And, you know, I don't, when we're talking about Lightoller, I don't want any low blows.
No, we're descending into Titanic puns.
You know,
you guys know that the Titanic swimming pool is still full.
You know, see, when I see that on Facebook groups, like, it's funny because there's like potentially thousands of people that have never heard that joke before, and they like it and they comment and they're like, oh my god, that's so funny. And then there's like us that are like, it's like, okay. But yeah, I love that. But yeah, so I guess you all now have a spoiler for what the next episode is going to be. Charles Herbert Lightoller, the man, the myth, the legend, and the, you know, controversial figure. And yeah, thank you all so much for listening to this episode. Thank you to Presley, Sebastian, and Callum for joining me. It's been a pleasure as always. And yeah, be sure to check us out on all the different platforms that we're on. So Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and YouTube. If you're not already, we're on Instagram and Facebook. We're also on Reddit, but, you know, I don't know who uses Reddit. I don't know if it's a great platform. I don't know, but we're on there and we get engagement. And we're also on Patreon, so be sure to check that out and check out the tiers and the different perks you can get if you support the show. And thank you for listening, and see you next time. Stop recording.